The term shooting the sun is seafaring slang for measuring the sun's altitude with a sextant. Shoot the moon is both a quaint old term for doing a midnight flit in a quaint old Alan Parker film. And shoot the comet, well, that one's new, very new. In the last week, NASA have announced plans to, for the first time, combine spaceship with marksmanship in their £200 million Deep Impact mission, which aims to fire a 350-kilogram projectile into the heart of the comet Tempel 1 as it passes close to Earth. Now, it's definitely a mission with a wow factor, but what about the why factor? What's to be gained in scientific rather than publicity terms from this act of cosmic vandalism? Well, on a phone somewhere in America is Mike Ahern, director of the Deep Impact mission, and in our Manchester studio is Duncan Steele, reader in space technology at Salford University and the author of the scarily titled Rogue Asteroids and Doomsday Comets, The Search for the Million Megaton Menace Which Threatens Life on Earth, which helped inspire those planetary disaster movies Deep Impact and Armageddon, although we won't hold that against him. Mike Ahern, so what's Comet Tempel 1 ever done to you?
Well, this particular comet hasn't done anything to me. It just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Well, the wrong time from the comet's point of view, probably.
Well, perhaps, yes. Hard to get a mission to a comet unless it is reasonably close to the sun and is close to the plane of the Earth's orbit. And this comet satisfies that criterion and allows us to launch when NASA said we could have a launch window.
All right, so if you just hunted around for a suitable comet and this was the one that best fitted your criteria.
Exactly.
Duncan Steele, what do we know about Tempel 1?
Yes, actually it's a great target comet. As Mike said, there's a limited number of opportunities, but this one really is ideal. It's been observed now for 130 odd years, but it was observed three times coming back in the 19th century, then it disappeared until the 1960s, when after, I think, a close approach to Jupiter, it got flipped into a slightly different orbit, which brings it a bit closer to the sun, and as a result of that, it kind of got active again and was spotted again. So in many ways, it is a great target. It's one we know the orbit of very precisely. Obviously, Mike needs to know exactly where this comet is going to be on July the 4th in 4 years' time. And so it's a great target all round.
Yes, I suppose you do need to know it exactly. You're not going to be going left a bit, up a bit, down a bit, right a bit, fire, do you, on the big day? I mean, Mike, what was the origin of the idea? This is a very different sounding kind of mission. Is it genuinely different?
Oh, yeah, this is an entirely different kind of mission. Most of the missions that NASA runs and all the space agency runs are passive ones, which go someplace and make passive observations. Occasionally, they'll do an experiment on a microscopic scale, analyze a single rock, or analyze a little parcel of gas in the atmosphere of a planet. But doing a real experiment on a planet scale, where you affect another planetary body at a macroscopic scale, is really rare. The only other good example I can think of is when we dropped a lunar module on the moon and measured the effect with the seismometers that had been scattered around by the astronauts.
Where I come from, the opposite of passive is aggressive. Is that what you're calling this kind of mission?
I was thinking of active and passive in the sense of verbs.
Take me through exactly what will happen then. You launch the rocket, and the rocket then launches the missile, effectively. It's a two-stage operation.
Well, it's actually two independent spacecraft, and they fly together for a year and a half. We do 1 year around the sun, practice our, calibrate our instruments, and practice the targeting algorithms on the moon, and then we go 6 months to the comet. And in fact, we don't launch one from the other. We separate as gently as we possibly can, about 1 day before impact. Then the impactor takes over its own control. It is a complete spacecraft, and it does this a little up, a little left, and a little to the right in order to impact on an illuminated part of the nucleus of the comet on the side where the flyby spacecraft will go by. The flyby has to slow down a little bit in order to give us a 15-minute window of observation before we fly past.
I take it that, as in all the best movies, you just get the one shot, do you?
That's right. One shot is it.
And you have to be pretty confident of your aim then, so this is what all the calibrating's about.
Yes, exactly.
And any figures on the speed of the collision between the impactor and the comet?
10.2 kilometers per second.
Which is 20-something thousand miles an hour, if my maths is up to it.
That's correct.
Okay, something like that. Duncan still, presumably true to the mission's title, then if it's going at that speed, we can expect a deep impact.
Yes, correct. In fact, some people seem to imagine that this projectile or the separate spacecraft might actually be carrying explosive charges. That's totally incorrect. In fact, there's absolutely no point. At that sort of speed, Mike mentioned, just over 10 kilometers per second, this big lump of copper and a few instruments on board actually has more energy than about 10 times that mass of TNT, just because of the high impact speed. It's kinetic energy, as physicists call it. And so indeed, it'll be a big bang. When that hits and it vaporizes, it's going to blow out a good size hole in the surface of that comet. And that's brilliant, because the whole aim of this mission is to see what comets are really made of. What have they got underneath their skin? Because up until now, all we've seen is the skin, and we really want to know what's underneath.
But it's not that big a comet, is it? Isn't there a possibility that it might not just gouge a hole out of Temple 1? It could send Temple 1 into smithereens.
Well, comets are pretty fragile. We do see comets fall apart for no apparent reason pretty well every year. Quite a prominent one last year, Comet Linear, smashed itself into lots of pieces in interplanetary space. So maybe it was thermal stress as the sun heated it and so on. So we know that comets are pretty fragile. And some newspaper reports have cast some sort of worry about this particular comet, saying, well, if it breaks apart, isn't that dangerous? The answer is no. Again, they've picked a beautiful target comet. It never comes close to the Earth. It is always at least 50% further away from the sun than is the Earth. And as a result, even if it is smashed into pieces, separate fragments, none of those fragments are going to come close to the Earth. So let's be absolutely clear here. There is no danger to us. This is the sort of mission which needs to be done in order to work out what comets are made of. And there are important scientific reasons for knowing that. Most of our bodies are actually made of bits of comets. You know, we're 70% water, and that water was delivered to the Earth by comets over the last 4 billion years. And it will be nice to know what comets are made of, and hence where the material came from that makes up us, ourselves.
So assuming you do hit it, how do you go about analysing whatever happens as a result of the collision?
Well, the images that we take will show this cone of ejecta coming up from the surface. The morphology of that cone is diagnostic of the physical properties, the density and the strength of the material. We'll use images to look for large chunks that were strong enough to resist the shock wave. I don't expect to see any, but we do see them on asteroids, so there might be such chunks. We use a spectrometer on board the flyby spacecraft to measure the spectrum of the dust and rocks that are ejected, and also of the gases that are ejected. So this tells us the composition, and as we see gradually deeper and deeper down as the material is excavated, we get an idea of how the composition varies with depth. We'll also have a major Earth-based observing campaign with all the other instruments that are much too big and heavy to carry on our spacecraft.
You mentioned about an Earth-based observing campaign, so that answers one of my questions. We should be able to see the impact from Earth, then?
Yes.
Just not with the naked eye or anything. This is a telescope deal, I presume.
It's a telescope deal primarily, although a crude estimate of how much brighter the comet will get says that it should get up to at least binocular visibility, possibly up to naked eye visibility. We simply don't know enough about comets to make this prediction with any confidence.
Although for those of us without telescopes, I think you have something planned, don't you, which is blanket television coverage.
Yes. In almost real time, we will be releasing some of the images that come back.
And when will all this be happening, so we can write it in our diaries?
July 4th, 2005.
Oh, July 4th. So this is, you're out to get deep impact with the media coverage as well, then, are you?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Is this, Duncan, part of the modern NASA mission? You know, you have to plan all these things. You have to have a name like Deep Impact, which ties in with the movies, and you have to have a nice sort of active element to it, and you have to try and make it climax in some interesting way, like July the 4th.
Well, I think it all helps, doesn't it?
It's not a required thing. In fact, the comet comes to perihelion on July 5th. That's the distance that which is closest to the sun. And we have to do it within a week or two of July 5th anyway, so we said, why not July 4th, to get just a little extra pizzazz out of it.
But come on, Mike, I mean, you've got to accept this is part of the modern NASA, is it? They have to be media savvy, don't they?
Oh, yeah, NASA is certainly very media savvy, and we need need to be media savvy because the public is paying a lot of money to fly these missions, and therefore it's important that the public understand what's going on and get a lot of exposure to it.
Mike, one of the things that people will think they will get out of this mission, and you can tell me whether they will, is this idea that comes from the title Deep Impact, that it might tell us whether or not we have the ability to blow up, ward off, shatter, or whatever it might be, rogue comets or asteroids that are heading our way.
Sure. We have no idea how to divert some rogue comet or asteroid unless we know what their physical properties are. And this mission provides basic physical data on a typical short-period comet that is crucial to understanding how you'd go about diverting it if it were coming to the Earth, which it's not, fortunately.
And Duncan, perhaps you should reassure us that the risk of something like that happening, it's not that great, is it, really? We shouldn't go around with steel umbrellas all the time.
Well, this particular comet is not a danger to us, as I've pointed out, and Mike has pointed out. But if we do take a look at comets in general, comets do hit the Earth from time to time. More important are asteroids. Asteroids hit the Earth more frequently than comets, and we do have a need to look for these things. And I'm sorry to disabuse you of the notion that there is a very slim chance. There is a significant chance. There's a higher chance that you will die due to an asteroid impact than you will die in a jetliner crash. I take that very seriously. I've spent much of the last 10 years trying to get various governments to take it seriously. The UK government is now taking it seriously. We're expecting another response to the UK Near-Earth Object Task Force report later on this year. It isn't something to panic about. You're quite right. No, we shouldn't walk around with a metal umbrella, but it is a significant hazard when you compare it to other things, which we do take very seriously. The good news is it is something we can do something about. And this mission is, a start towards this kind of idea of, as you've put it, being able to divert one of these things if we did need to.
I'm sorry about being unalarmist there. It goes against all my media training. This is a randomly picked comet. I mean, there are some people out there who feel this is also an act of cosmic vandalism. I mean, do we have to go and put our mark on the galaxy in this way by blowing things up? I ask that to both of you, really. You first, Duncan.
No, we don't have to. But this is science. This is taking a look around. This is exploration. I mean, the Antarctic is quite pristine, and if nobody ever went there, it would stay that way. But actually, there are scientists go down there to take a look and study the penguins, study other things which live there, study all sorts of things, like the climate there. There are also tourists that go down to take a look. If you're going to try and stop people from investigating comets, then there's lots of other things on the Earth I think we should stop first. And I don't think we should stop. We should be exploring. We should be taking a look and seeing our context in the overall scheme of the cosmos. And this is one part of it.
Mike?
If you think of the moon, the amount of litter that has been left behind on the moon would draw tremendous fines if there were fines for littering on the moon.
Mike, we've established this as a serious mission with meaningful scientific goals, but a final question for you, and I want you to, even though you're down a telephone line, I want you to look me in the eyes as you answer this one. Isn't there a bit of you that, that's the small boy about this? You're going out into outer space and you're zapping an alien object. That's got to be appealing, hasn't it?
Sure, of course. There is a little bit of that in all of science, perhaps more so in this mission than in most parts of science, but that, in essence, is what drives us to understand how things work. A childlike innocence in trying to understand what's going on can be very valuable to a scientist.
Mike Ahern, deep thanks for being candidly childlike, and Duncan Steele, just thanks. If you have any comet comments or missile missives, you can send them to us via our web pages, where you can also get links to sites connected with what we've covered today, and if you so wish, hear the entire programme again. First, set your sights on the Radio 4 homepage at www.bbc.co.uk/Radio 4. That's all one word with the 4 as a number. Then target Material World within the list of programmes.